Hello, everybody, and welcome to NPC Cast. On today's episode, we talk about expansions, and as always, we tell you what we are excited about. It is October 4th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 40 of NPC Cast.
You are now listening to NPC Cast, your place for face-to-face games.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to NPC Cast, your place for face-to-face games. My name is Chris, and I'm coming to you from sunny Seattle, Washington. And like I do every single week, I brought a couple of NPCs along with me. To my left, and a little bit shorter because he's sitting down and I'm standing up, he is NPC Aaron. Aaron, how are you doing?
I don't know. I'm having a hard time because I don't do podcasts with cowards.
What? Okay, if this is War Machine related, I defy you and say I'm not a coward. I just want to have a fully painted army.
For your 15-point game?
Yeah.
Okay.
How many models do you have painted?
I have two.
Okay. And I am one model away from actually finishing my 15 points and for the first time ever having a fully painted War Machine force.
Cool. I mean, all I hear is I'm so afraid of the Circle of Ouroboros. They're going to destroy me.
Boring.
I thought you were going to go with Borboros.
I couldn't think of anything. Oh, yeah.
You guys are nerds.
Coming to us from the frozen tundra of the north, he's NPC Del. Del, how are you doing?
I'm actually pretty warm right now.
Is it warm in the frozen tundra?
No, actually. Up? I got a little pullover sweater, and I got about 25 of those hand warmth bags.
Oh, yeah.
I just cracked them all like glow sticks and dumped them down my sweater. I'm just marinating in heat packs.
I think that's sort of dangerous. If one of those things like springs a leak, you're kind of screwed.
I'm willing to take that risk.
Okay.
If you pass out from heat stroke, we'll call 911 and direct them to your apartment.
To the North Pole. Go to Santa's house.
Yeah, when you see Santa, just left and then like 20 minutes right there.
Very, very good. If you guys want to reach us via Twitter, via social media, it's very easy to do that. My Twitter handle is at NPC Chris. Aaron?
NPC Aaron.
And Del?
At NPC DEL.
Very, very good. If you want to reach the show as a whole, if you want to just shout at all of us at the same time in equal volume, you can go to NPC Cast on Twitter, which is at NPC Cast on Twitter. If they want to go to Facebook, Aaron, where do they go?
They go to facebook.com/NPCcast.
And if you go to the Facebook page right now, you can see all the works in progress. Note, again, just for the record, a lot more of my painted models are showing up there for some odd reason. Eventually, Aaron will get around to, you know, doing something. But until then, you get my beautiful models, and you can pick them apart and point out how I got arms on backwards.
I'm gonna put my Firestorm Armada fleet on there.
Do you have it painted?
Yeah, I have everything except the battle cruiser. I got all the support ships painted.
Nice. If you want to reach us via email, you can reach us at thenpccast@gmail.com. If for some reason 140 characters or whatever Facebook's limit doesn't give you enough space, you can always send us an email or a series of emails in multiple parts, and we'll take those as well. So, all that being said, let's get right into the topic of today's show. This is something that has come up recently for my playgroup. I've been playing a lot of board games, a lot of tabletop games with some friends of mine in a downtime, and we've been playing a lot of Legendary. And Aaron can attest to this. Legendary has a very, very sweet expansion.
Yes. I didn't know if you needed me to vocally a test.
Right. I mean, they can't hear you nodding.
Well, you said I could. I didn't know if they needed proof.
He could attest, but he doesn't need to, nor will he attest. Okay, very good. So we've been playing a lot of the Legendary expansion because it makes it a lot harder, which got me to thinking, well, let's do an episode on expansions. Expansions in tabletop games. Go ahead.
I don't know.
Is it weird for you because I'm standing up?
I think so. It's really awkward for me.
Do you want me to sit down?
No, I'm going to get used to it. You seem so comfortable.
I just like it. It gives me more energy.
You know what? Hang on.
That's good.
There we go. I'm going to stand up, too. I'm going to see how this...
Oh, yeah. Let me know how it feels, Del.
It's weird. I'm looking down at the show notes. I don't...
I always look down on the show notes.
Even when you write them.
Okay, so that got me into thinking about expansions in tabletop games. So I don't know. Are there going to be listeners that we need to explain what an expansion is? Do you think, Aaron?
It adds to the game.
There you go.
There you go. So expansions in games are something that's sort of becoming a big, huge part of tabletop games, as we'll get to in a little bit. But basically, we're going to cover a whole show on expansions and kind of go through what we feel makes good expansions. So let's start off with breaking down the types of expansions that games have, because I really kind of think of it as two different categories. In one hand, you have Legendary. And what does the Legendary expansion do to the core game, Aaron?
It basically just adds more of it.
Adds options, right. Adds more pieces.
Yeah, there's a few little mechanical tweaks here and there. But overall, you're playing the same game as you were before, but there are, you know, it adds like 17 more heroes and mm-hmm. 7 masterminds and a bunch of stuff, essentially. So it just varies the experience you had with the original a lot more.
Right, and the same thing for games like Dominion, for example, where Dominion has another expansion that comes out, and it just gives you more of the same. Cards Against Humanity gives you more just cards to sort of shuffle into the stuff that you're already playing with and sort of broadens things out in that direction. Now, the other type of expansion is something that actually changes the mechanics or offers variance to the play. Can you think of an example of one of those, Aaron?
Sure. The Cities expansion for Seven Wonders adds a team play variant that works with up to 8 people, and it works pretty differently. On the same note, the Asia maps for Ticket to Ride add mm-hmm. team play. There's a lot of them. A lot of the more like modular game expansions have a part, like are part both, essentially.
Yeah, the right. Pegasus expansion for Battlestar Galactica adds an entire section where you land on New Caprica and set up there.
Yeah, so those are the two sort of camps that we're in. One is sort of adding just additional content to an existing game, and the other one is changing the gameplay experience in some way. Games like Pandemic that have expansions that, you know, offer totally new roles that are sort of counter to what everyone else is doing and different elements like that. So those are going to be kind of the two camps that we're going to be talking about as we're talking about expansions. Now, admittedly, I love the Legendary expansion. But I also love expansions like Cities, and Aaron, you think that Cities basically make Seven Wonders into like the optimal game.
Yeah, the team way of playing that game is actually better, because as you pointed out last night, you're really still for the most part only playing that game with 2 other people. Other than people cutting you from draft cards further down, maybe there's really no interaction. Mm-hmm. And the team game, because even if you're not interacting with somebody directly, like somebody on your team is and you're talking strategy with them, allows you to feel like it makes it into more of the bigger party game that it is.
Exactly. And so, you know, both of these schools of thought and both of these camps of expansions have their own uses. Del, in your opinion, what makes a good expansion?
A good expansion is going to be something that adds to the game for the players who are experienced at it, but doesn't overwhelm a new player with too many options so that if you try and spread it out on the table, a new player just has their mind exploded.
Right. Yeah, I think that's pretty fair, and that's something that I didn't even think about. Aaron, when you're thinking about board games and teaching new players board games, for example, Legendary, do you think it's better to start with the base game and then build from there? Or is the Legendary expansion close enough to the base set that you can get by teaching the game with the expansion?
I think it would depend. I think if people have played deck-building games, then you could probably go straight to Dark City, mm-hmm. Because then the core concepts they pretty much already know. However, if you did not play a deck-building game, I would probably start with the base game because it's, you know, beatable a lot more of the time.
It's actually beatable.
Yeah, I don't know that for your first game of Legendary, getting crushed by Apocalypse because you keep drawing that card that just goes back in the deck is really what you want to do. But once you're good at the game and you're just like in that mode where you're like, we have to take down Apocalypse, then it's awesome to play that way. So for me, like whether an expansion is good is this very visceral feeling. When I've played the game a lot and then I add an expansion, if I feel like the game is a new experience again, then it was a good expansion. Mm-hmm. If I'm like, oh, well, this will add five more plays onto the life of this game that I've already played the hell out of, then I'm like, it's not that good to me. That doesn't justify the like $30 I often have to spend.
Yeah, you know, it's sort of a weird balance because in some cases, I mean, there are certain games that can get by with adding just, you know, adding other elements that are the same thing. Like, for example, if we look at like Magic, which comes out with more expansions a year than, you know, almost any other game that's out there. You look at Magic and each sort of set adds existing cards, and they do have some new mechanics in them, but for the most part it's a lot more of the same sort of build on that, and it keeps it kind of fresh. But something that doesn't get, if there's a tabletop game or a board game that doesn't get a lot of expansions, I feel that in order to make the game feel new, they sort of have to go a little bit further with the expansion and kind of come at it from a different angle.
Yeah, I can think of some expansions that like don't really work for me because all they do is add content and not in like a huge enough quantity that it will always even come up in mm-hmm. a given playthrough. So if I've already played your game to death and then you add like, you know, five new heroes to your cooperative superhero game, well, once I've played all five of those new heroes, that's like kind of over. However, if all of a sudden you add a mode where we all get to play as villains or something, mm-hmm. well, that's so much more content in number of plays. So I think that good expansions do that. One way they can do it is by being modular, mm-hmm. essentially being a lot of mini expansions you can pick and choose from. The Pandemic expansions work like that. You don't have to play with all of them, nor would I suggest playing with all of them, but you can be like, well, this time we'll add the bioterrorist in, or this time we'll add the mutating viruses. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a cool approach to expansions, I think.
Do we want to talk about splat books?
Yeah, I mean, we can talk a little bit about RPG splat books because I think they're sort of in the same vein. Did you have any in mind that you want to talk about specifically?
Definitely two things come to mind. One is Complete Psionic for D&D 4th Edition, or the Psionic splat book with PowerPoints, because that added an entire style of building a character across all the different roles that it's not super great, because it basically gives you options that are only usable, you know, by those classes. So the only reason to even open that book is if you want to play a Scion or you want to play a Battle Mind. And it's not great when you balkanize your books like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that's interesting about expansions, right, is sometimes the sort of implication is that if you like a game, you should always purchase, you know, all the available expansions and play those. But there's something to be said for just liking a game in its, like, base form and never adding expansions to it. You know, I mean, for example, This is sort of a loose example, but when you talk about Warhammer 40,000, the miniatures game, you know, for the longest time you had sort of this core element, the core rule book, and then eventually they came out with something called Apocalypse Rules. And Apocalypse Rules basically were a rule set that allows you to play with even larger armies. And they gave you, like, special rules for having entire formations of Space Marines, and if you have, like, 10 tanks, you get to use this special rule, and all sorts of crazy stuff like that. So it was targeted at a very specific sort of cadre of players who just loved it, and they were all about it. And at the time, I was working for Games Workshop when it came out, and I had some people that came into my store that would only play at Apocalypse games. They wanted to play, like, you know, 6,000, 7,000 points or bust, right? And so that was kind of their thing. But there were still a lot of players who never bought the Apocalypse source book, never bought any of the the special Apocalypse miniatures, and sort of kept it small because that was the part of the game that they enjoyed, and they kind of forged ahead with that.
I mean, I think that is different between minis and RPGs and then board games. Like in board games, I think because of the nature of sales numbers and cost to produce all the pieces, you generally want to create an expansion, unless you're like Catan and you're huge, that all of the people who loved your game are going to want to buy because there's something in it for them. Mm-hmm. Whereas RPGs, I think the Psionics Handbook being just usable by people who wanted to play Psionics characters is totally fine, because I don't want to have to buy every book for an RPG. So having books that don't interest me, interest other people in the group, is kind of good for my wallet, because I have acquisition disorder, and if every book has something for me, I will buy every book. So I think it's a problem in RPG splat books if not everyone who buys the game needs to buy every mm-hmm. every book that comes out.
Yeah, I mean, you can make a more modular experience. You can buy the things that you want to play with and ignore the things you don't. I think 4E specifically had one sort of problem against the modularity aspect, and that was the character creator, the online character creator that sort of assumed that you were using all of the expansions or all the source books at any given time. And so it's sort of hard to parse. It's like, okay, well, what book did this feat come from? And it kind of became a little bit bloated towards the end of its illustrious life.
You said a little bit. A little bit bloated? Have you looked at the character creator?
It was a large meal. Bloated. It had a large meal, yeah. And it felt a little bit bloated.
It should not go swimming. Fourth edition
went swimming, it would get cramps.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's just be honest. So, Del, in your sort of estimation at this point, right now with where we're at with tabletop games, so Del, do you think that expansions at this point are sort of expected, and that's what players expect their games to do, is come out with expansions eventually?
I think that they are. Definitely, expansions are a great way for designers to make a little extra money, because it's much easier to design an expansion than come up with another entirely new and groundbreaking game. It's much easier to mm-hmm. expand and twist a extant game that your company produces. But I don't know that every game needs to have an expansion, and I find it very frustrating when a game is predicated on there being an expansion that will fill in the holes that the original game didn't ship with.
That is something to think about. Aaron, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I just want to say, first off, it is expected that games have expansions, because now most publishers, when they sign the agreement to publish your game, there is essentially part of the contract that is, if your game sells this many, this agreement extends to an expansion that will produce by this mm-hmm. date and so on. Sort of like writers sign book deals. So yes, but I agree with Del. Nothing, and this happens in Kickstarter all the time, it's like exemplified there, nothing makes me madder than where I can tell that a game is just incomplete until an expansion comes out. I think this is following from the PC game model, where they like would ship games way before they were ready and then just patch it in later with the money. Kickstarters, they clearly like start with a bare bones version of the game, and then through stretch goals you get the game they actually wanted to produce.
Yeah, I think Kickstarter is sort of unique, and we're going to talk a little bit more about Kickstarter later, I'm sure, when we talk about what we're excited about this week. But I think Kickstarter is a little bit interesting when it comes to new and fresh games, especially from new and first-time designers. Is the fact of the matter is to get a game at a price point where you can have a successful Kickstarter and produce a product, you do sort of sometimes have to cut some corners. And sometimes those corners are cut on components that should be included but aren't, or maybe more cards, or those types of things. And so I think a lot of times what happens is that people will have their game slice off parts of it to make it something that's a little bit more palatable, a little bit more manageable, and then go with the assumption that they're going to add stuff in later, when that's not necessarily always the case.
Right, and the nightmare scenario is something like Gamma World, the the new edition of Gamma World, where the product gets canned before they're able to release everything that they meant to put out for it, leaving the fans, you know, high and dry who wanted, you know, extra levels or the ability to go to 20 in Gamma World, and now we'll never get that.
Yeah. I want to go back to the sort of the presumption that expansions are necessary, not just from like a publisher standpoint, but do you feel that like the average board game consumer at this point, if they buy a game, they really like it, they expect that an expansion will come out at some point?
Probably, unless it's a, you know, dry Euros. Often, even successful ones don't have expansions. Mm-hmm. Like Castles of Burgundy will probably never have an expansion, but it's a good game and people like it.
I was trying to think of a synonym for the color burgundy, but I couldn't think of any in time.
Maroon.
Oh, there you go.
Keeps of Maroon.
The Keeps of Maroon.
Go on. I'm sorry to interrupt with that stupid joke.
Oh, wow.
Not
the
sorry.
Estates of Crimson. other than those kind of games, I think other games, and you know, maybe like traditionalist games like dice games or something may not always get expansions, but in general, when you buy a board game and you love it, I think as a consumer, you generally expect there to be an expansion. Terra Mystica is getting an expansion, and that was one I figured may not have an expansion. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I think expansions are spreading and becoming even more prominent.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised we got this far into the podcast without mentioning, but you know, your boy Bowser is coming out with a Takedo expansion. Is that something like, you know, obviously we're fans of most of Antoine Bowser's games. You know, we don't give all designers rap names, but when we do, that means we like you. So your boy Bowser is working on this Takedo expansion. Would you rather see him doing that or working on his new game? Like, you know, his new idea that he has, hypothetical idea.
I mean, it's hard to say for him because he's so prolific that he's probably doing both of those
things.
Yeah,
I mean, he probably has six games that he's working on.
But
right
would
now.
I rather he divert more energy towards something new? I don't know, because I really like Takedo, and I'm interested to see how it's expanded because it's very linear, and I don't think like Bowser would be the type of person to be like more characters, and we're done. You know, it's gotta something's got to be very different.
It's like a board extension that makes it a little bit longer.
There's like a whole nother track that tracks your emotional state during the journey or something. I don't know, but I think that I'm interested to see how that expansion turns out. But you know, there are designers who are probably working on expansions that aren't as prolific, and I'm like, oh man, I just wish they were working. Like the guys who did Terra Mystica, to be honest, adding some more races and stuff to Terra Mystica is cool, but those guys are awesome game designers. I'd rather just see a new game.
Yeah.
And that's the sticking point for me is I want to see the next game rather than have them keep mining a game they've already finished. You know, the guys like Robin Laws, you know, and the other people who are still working on Splat books, I'd rather see them write a new RPG that's as good as, you know, an Unknown Armies.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, it's sort of an interesting sort of problem, because there is also, you know, it's effort and thought, especially when it comes to design, having tried, you know, my hand at various creative works, be it, you know, game design or, you know, video production or all that stuff, music writing, sometimes your ideas come at you in fragments. And so it's not like Antoine Bowser is like only has enough brain space to either work on an expansion for Takedo or a new game. You know, sometimes I imagine, and I don't know him, he's my boy, but I don't know him. But I imagine that sometimes he sits down and he has some ideas for a Takedo expansion and sort of jots those down and works those out. And then if inspiration strikes, I'm sure he, you know, works on something else. Like, so it's not really exactly always the same. But as consumers, you know, we're looking at it from, you know, the end product, right? In a lot of ways, it's sort of mirroring Hollywood. And the fact of the matter is it's like we can put millions of dollars into starting this new franchise, or we can make a sequel for this movie that we know is going to make X amount of dollars just because it has the same name as the movie before it.
Yeah, I mean, to go back to your point, I was going to say I don't know any designers. I follow a lot of their blogs. I don't know any of them who have only a single game in their what they're working on discussions, you know. Mm-hmm. Grant Rodiek, who was on that panel and did Farmageddon, I follow his blog, and there's like 5 games that are talked about in there from time to time. And I know I tried to sit down and work on the game we talked about last episode the other night, and like the ideas just weren't there, but the ideas for something else were.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, so you work on what you have inspiration for. And
if you want to get an idea of how prolific a lot of these game designers are, follow Daniel Solis on Twitter. He literally comes up with a game idea, if not multiple, every single day. He'll be like, oh, so I thought about this. With a normal deck of playing cards, you could do this. Or, you know, he does a lot of micro games and stuff like that. Like, he made Koi Pond, which is, I think... he made Koi Pond. What's his newest game, though? It's
Bell of the Ball.
He's always just, you know, overflowing with these ideas. And I think a lot of, like, the best designers are sort of those people. They really take that sort of this will not be your last game mantra to heart, and they just crank stuff out, and you know, some of it sticks and some of it gets worked on and some of it doesn't. So if you had money, if you had that sounded weird.
How did you know I only have $5?
If you weren't dirt poor, Aaron. If you had money to spend for a game, are you more likely to buy an expansion to a game you already own and love, or a new game by, like, let's say the same designer, to make the example a little bit closer?
Most of the time, a new game by the same designer. Unless, mm-hmm. I mean, occasionally it'll be a game I really love, like one of my top 10, essentially, and then I'll want to expand about it. So, for instance, obviously I love Terra Mystica because it's the third time it's come up this episode.
Yep.
Even though I am not super eager, I wish those designers would design something else. I love that game so much that when the expansion comes out, it's going to be hard for me to justify putting those dollars somewhere else than in this game I've already got like 20, 30 plays out of.
Right.
Which is a lot for a game that takes 2 to 3 hours to play.
What about you, Del? You talked about you'd rather have those designers working on their next new thing. If you're going to spend your hard-earned dollars, your hard-earned whatever currency you guys have in the Frozen Tundra of the North, would you be more likely to purchase an expansion for a game you own or try a new game out?
I would probably be more interested in spending my wolf pelts on expansions to games I already love. It's so important to get to revisit old games that maybe have been in the closet for a while. Pull them back out, add, you know, clip on an extra piece of the board, and enjoy them in a whole new way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking in my head, it's like, I love games, and I love a lot of different games, but if the choice is between, you know, adding to something that I already know for a fact is a hit in, you know, my playgroup, I'm going to do that before I sort of jump down the rabbit hole of another game. That being said, it's like, you know, I'm down to try as many new things as possible, and then, you know, hopefully you try a game out and it clicks with you, and you know you pick that up, and then you start buying its expansions or whatever.
Now, is this the same for RPGs?
RPGs are different for me, and that's unfair, Aaron. And it's unfair for you to say that, because with me, I sort of have RPG ADD, and I love RPGs. I don't think that'd be a surprise to anyone. And so I do like to buy a lot of different RPGs and just sort of read how they do things. So I guess that's true. In an RPG,
I mean,
like,
I have it too. It would be unfair of me to judge. I have it just as bad.
Right.
But when I'm buying a new bookcase this week, so I'll take some pictures of my RPG collection.
Yeah.
And post them to the
Facebook. Yeah, I mean, it's the thing with RPGs is like you said, it's modularity, right? So if there's an expansion that, you know, really piques my interest, like some of the Weird Wars stuff is really, really cool and kind of unique settings for Savage Worlds, I would be inclined to pick those up. But if it's like between that or, you know, buying Edge of the Empire or something, I would probably try Edge of the Empire before I picked up an expansion for an existing RPG.
And on the same coin, you don't buy every Savage World setting that comes out, nor do I. It's,
exactly.
Yeah.
And I think, like, except for maybe D&D, and I don't know, Del, maybe you, when you were sort of in your World of Darkness, like the prime of your World of Darkness career, maybe you purchased every book that came out for the Darkness, but...
No. Not even a little. Oh.
They did have a lot of splat books.
Yeah.
They did have a lot. Was it because of the quantity that they had that caused you to do that?
It was the quantity, and it was the fact that one of the problems RPG splat books have is that to keep players interested in the next new thing, you keep having to escalate things and give them bigger and bigger and better toys. And you can see that in every RPG. It's very difficult to get around it because you also don't want to print things where the new shiny thing is also demonstrably worse than the thing you already have. And World of Darkness, especially OWAD, definitely cranked up the cracked out powers that are available as a combo discipline in the Cappadocians clan book that was ridiculous compared to a Cardinal 8 power in the core book.
Yeah, I think in some ways minis have fallen prey to that in the past, especially like the Games Workshop stuff has been accused of sort of that power creep that we talked about in previous episodes. I do want to bring it to back to a little bit towards the beginning of the conversation, because this was sort of, I didn't put it on the show notes because it just came up in conversation, but new players, introducing new players to games. We have been talking a lot about Legendary. If you're a listener, you know that we all three of us really, really enjoy this game. And we had talked about it a lot in the podcast, and some people that we know picked it up. Some people in our immediate play group, some people we've met online, picked up Legendary to play it. And we were very, very adamant about them picking up the expansion because we also love the expansion, and we feel that it makes it more difficult, which in turn, I feel, makes cooperative games more fun when they're a little bit more difficult. But a lot of the people that we that picked up Legendary, some of them even had the expansion and hadn't got around to playing it because they wanted us to start from the beginning. Do you think we were a little bit overzealous in our pushing of Dark City?
Maybe, because one thing I try to do is when I get excited about a game that already has expansions, I have to hold myself back. I'm like, don't buy these expansions right away. You'll just be robbing yourself of playtime. Mm-hmm. Like Galaxy Trucker, I bought that relatively recently. And I was, there's, you know, two expansions, and I was like, don't buy these yet because you haven't got the fun that everyone else did when the game first came out of just playing, you know, the regular Galaxy Trucker. Mm-hmm. And then when that gets old, add the expansion. So if you have the self-control like the people that we're talking about to not play it, I mean, I guess it's okay. Yep. But I don't have that. If I bought both, I'm just going to jam them both together and start immediately from the more complicated point. So I think it's important to play the game in its original state first and then add the expansion.
Yeah. Is there any examples that either you or maybe you, Del, can think of where a game almost has a mandatory expansion that you feel should be included in the first time out to really get the full experience?
Ticket to Ride's 1910 expansion should be included in the box.
Yep.
Because it has the oversized train cards rather than the tiny ones that are very annoying to shuffle. So I, here in the store, almost every time somebody buys Ticket to Ride, I'm like, I'm not just trying to attach something. I'm not trying to like super upsell you. But you're going to play this game, and shuffling these cards is going to annoy you. And I just want you to know that there is an expansion for that. And the moment I just like pitch it that way, almost everyone buys it right then. They're like, I'll spend an extra $18 to not be irritated at my game. Because
the expansion to Castle Panic comes with the sweet tile bag, which is awesome. Like it makes the game way better. Even if you don't play with the expansion, you don't play with any of like the Wizard's Tower pieces, buy it just for the bag because it makes the whole process way better.
Yeah, I also think that Castle Panic's replayability without the extra monsters and the Wizard's Tower is a little low. Mm-hmm. So I might suggest getting that one right off the bat just for giving you more of a game.
Right, and of course, Legendary. It has some of the same problems with Castle Panic in that some people think that the base game is too easy. Some people think that. I thought it was, you know, adequately tuned, I think, for when I was first playing it. However, now that I've played Dark City, I don't know if I could ever go back. I mean,
yeah, I hope if the people at Upper Deck are listening, I really hope they revisit those masterminds like Dr. Doom and Magneto. Mm-hmm. And give them the appropriate like treatment that they gave the new masterminds, because right now I'm just like, I never really want to fight like Red Skull ever again. So
Mole Man is going to come out and he's going to be harder to beat than Dr. Doom.
which is ridiculous.
And that's a shame.
Yeah.
No offense to our mole brethren listening to us from the center of the earth.
Dr. Doom.
So?
He's got seniority on him.
I mean, okay. I can't think of a joke to
do you really think Mole Man should be more powerful than Loki or than Magneto? Because he's going to be.
People don't give Mole Man respect.
That's because he's dumb. He's a dumb villain. He's not cool.
Sorry, Mole Man. If you're a listener, I apologize. So let's think about some of our favorite expansions. Let's try to not to mention ones we've already mentioned on this episode or on, you know, previous
can
episodes.
Can it be a model of expansions in the case of a larger franchise?
I want to say no, like most suggestions you have, but I'm intrigued, so go on.
I was going to say that I actually really like the way that War Machine and Hordes adds to their game. In addition to just having new factions every once in a while, about once every other year, a book will come out for either War Machine or Hordes that adds a few new things to every expansion. And it's really good because at the price point of a minis game, it doesn't break the bank to keep up with your faction, but it shakes up the meta. These new things change up the balance of power in the competitive scene for the game. And I think it's definitely one of the better ways that minis games adds to the games, because it also it adds at least the stats so that you can proxy those units right up front, and then the models, you know, trickle out over the following months. But having that means that everyone gets new stuff at the same time, and it's not like the Games Workshop model where unless your codex is of the latest edition, you're not on a level playing field.
Right, and the difference, I think, is that and it's sort of like what came first, the chicken or the egg, but the difference is that in Games Workshop, their game is not really, they don't tailor their game for the competitive players. Then again, maybe a lot of those competitive players would, you know, participate in their game more if they would fix that issue with the way that they bring out source books. War Machine Hordes really focuses, like, has a really, really, really huge following for competitive players, and they really focus on that, and they sort of support that in the way that they release their stuff. Del, can you think of some of your favorite expansions throughout history?
Yes. I got one that's going to be a little genre bending. Texas Hold'em.
Okay.
Yeah, Texas Hold'em takes the pieces you already have, your 52-card playing deck, and you know, inverts the conventions of having to use, you know, three cards from the board and two from your hand, and changes things up, and I think is a big step forward to poker. It's a fairly new invention too. It wasn't invented in the Old West. So when you see people playing Texas Hold'em in movies in Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, yeah, Texas Hold'em is not that old.
So, Del, Texas Hold'em is sort of, it, like you said, it's a new, Texas Hold'em is a new game style or new way to play, you know, standard poker, standard like five or, you know, seven card stud or whatever.
Right.
What sort of, so if we're going to break this down and compare this to other board game expansions, we put it into the camp of obviously it's changing the mechanics and variants, but what does it do? What elements did Texas Hold'em bring to poker that make it better in your opinion?
It added additional betting rounds. Normal five-card draw just has the two stages of betting, whereas Texas Hold'em adds several more steps. It also adds a feature of incomplete information instead of non-existent information. With five card draw, your only information about your opponent is how many cards you've requested and what his bet was. With Hold'em, you actually can start doing some math on what cards on the board beat you, and allow you to create some much more advanced solutions to the problems you're having.
Yeah, I mean, from a design perspective, it's really interesting because a lot of times, you know, in my designs, I like to sort of add hidden information. I want to make sure that my games have that hidden element so that you're sort of left thinking, like, what your opponents might want to do or trying to discern what they're going to do. But Texas Hold'em sort of in my opinion, made poker a little bit stronger because it gave you more information. And it kind of struck a balance. So now you're balancing that known information versus the hidden information, and it added some layers to it that I thought was really compelling. Another example, Aaron.
I was going to say, since we all gave kind of non-standard examples, I should also say a board game that has great expansions that we have not mentioned already would be Descent. Descent has really good expansions. All of them add new heroes and new hero options to play. They add new monsters. They all add one new, like, core mechanic. And it, because of the very modular and you know, because it's you, as you can take authorship of any one scenario so well, they really change up the game and add a lot to the playtime. And I think they're pretty cool. And that's a more traditional board game that, since we all gave weird answers the first time around.
Right. So that kind of wraps up the expansion discussion, as always. Feel free to let us know what expansions you think are great or even terrible. Let us know what games we should try with the expansions included. We'd be happy to hear sort of your ideas on what you think are mandatory expansions to games. And we can go from there. But let's now...
I gotta sit down. This is crazy. I've been standing this whole time.
Yeah,
it's,
me too.
It's too much.
You're bailing
on me?
How can
you do that?
Dale, it's not even an hour of standing.
I'm all confused. I'm looking down instead of up at my screen.
are you so far north that up is down and down is up now?
Yeah. It's you know compasses don't work when you come up here. They just spin in a circle.
On that note, we will get to the things we are excited about, and we will get to that right now. Okay, on to the things that we are excited about. Who wants to start?
I want to start. I got a thing I'm really excited about.
Dell, start us off.
I am actually excited about a Kickstarter. Believe it or not.
You don't say.
I am excited. By Night Games, who... White Wolf has basically accepted will be doing their physical print publishing, has kickstarted the MET rules for OWAD Vampire. MET Vampire is my preferred version of Vampire, and it is one of the most busted systems imaginable. It is not good by any sense of the word. Players have worked hard to make it good. But they just... They hit their funding goal. Their goal was 60 grand, and they made 233. And now previews are starting to come out, and they released the vertical slice, and so many things have been fixed, and so many things have been fixed in a novel, progressive way rather than just slapping a coat of paint over the old thing that didn't work. And I am super excited for where this goes, and I am totally jazzed about purchasing and then never getting to run Mind's Eye Theater for Vampire the Masquerade.
I was wondering when you were going to explain what MET stood for. I was ready to hop in.
What does MET stand for?
Mind's Eye Theater.
And explain what that means.
Mind's Eye Theater is the live action rule set for Vampire the Masquerade, for when you want to stand around in the park or the coffee house in a black trench coat and actually pretend to be a vampire rather than sit at a table and pretend to be a vampire.
I'm also excited for this because I actually, for the first time in the store here, am stocking a LARP. It is a zombie LARP with rules altered from the game of Tag, and it's really awesome sounding. And I was like, man, I'd love to just do some like small LARPs. I think it would be really fun to like do something ridiculous. So I also am interested. Also, I'm interested because somebody is going to make paper copies of White Wolf material again, which was a shame that went only to print on demand. So,
I have never done LARPing. I've done sort of the boffer weapon fighting, but I've never actually done like full on role play LARPs. I will be honest. I would give it a shot. If you wanted to run like a LARP for a couple people, Dell, I would give it a shot. Now, I'm not going to promise anything.
What we'll do is we'll get all get GoPros and we'll make a TPK LARP. Oh,
that would be a twist on this season of TPK. Just when the players got comfortable,
things get live.
Action.
All right, well, now I know what I'm excited about next week.
Like I want there to be like the hidden camera footage of the table, everyone's sitting around, you know, about to play a TBK, and then all of a sudden the walls fall down and they realize it really is into the wild and it's just anarchy.
I'm into this.
This would be awesome. That'd be a good TBK twist. TBKT. That's a great April Fool's joke that we just wasted.
I know.
Damn it.
We'll have to think of a whole new April Fool's joke now.
We only have until April. Moving
this
on.
This is episode 40, by the way. I just want to point out, we haven't really like talked about that. It's about time that we left our wives for a much younger woman and bought a sports car we can't afford. That's how old the show is.
I'm glad the only person who has a wife was the one to make that joke.
She doesn't listen, Anna, so it's okay.
Anna, are you listening? Let's get on to what you were excited about, Aaron.
So, way back when, in like one of the first episodes, I think it may even be episode one, the thing I am excited about is the year of Shadowrun. And I don't want to criticize Catalyst because I know that a lot of things have happened for them this year. But the year of Shadowrun has been a little slow going. Shadowrun Returns, the video game, did come out. The RPG was supposed to come out, I think, in like the first quarter or the second quarter, and it just came out. But it is what I am excited about because the book is amazing looking, and not just the like hardcover leather bound version with like the gold on the, you know, gold design on the cover. That version is also amazing looking, but like the regular version, the layout is just so good. And I think it and Star Wars Edge of the Empire may have the two best layouts I've ever seen in RPGs. Mm-hmm. And so I, just flipping through the book, I was instantly like, yes, I want to play Shadowrun again. I want Dell to run it. I want to go fetch Ken Griffey Jr.'s urine out of and replace it with clean urine.
Hold on. So a showrunner has just passed me these notes, and this is official? Okay, he's saying it's official. Episode 2 was the episode that you were excited about, Shadowrun.
Episode 2. All right.
It's probably official. Because our showrunner gave
me
this.
Why did he crinkle it so much as he ran by?
Because he was in a hurry.
Oh, okay. He just crinkled it up and threw it over his shoulder.
Yeah.
And then you caught it in your mouth. It was weird.
That's how I do.
But yeah, it looks awesome. The rules for adepts and stuff, which are one of my favorite character types in that game, I was reading through last night. And I'm super excited to run Shadowrun. I'll probably force it into our TPK schedule when we start those back up at some point because I know you guys want to play Shadowrun.
Moving on, I will talk about what I am excited about now.
If you must.
And this is actually a sequel because earlier in our illustrious podcasting career, Dell has spoken a lot about his Bones Kickstarter from Reaper. Well, just today, Reaper Miniatures announced Bones 2. The Return of Mr. Bones. And it is another Bones Kickstarter.
Yeah, how did they not do Bone Harder?
Electric Bonaloo.
Ooh, that's very good, too.
Yeah.
I can keep going.
The Die Hard should go, though, because eventually you get to live free or bone. Which is pretty good. A good
you're
day
so,
to
bone. You're so proud. You're so proud of yourself.
We could just throw the explicit tag on this. We're fine.
You're so proud of yourself. No, so they have a new Bones Kickstarter. It already is crazy. Like, if you've been following me on Twitter or you're following us on Facebook, we already talked about it a little bit. It is nuts. They launched today. They're currently at $943,000.
You haven't hit refresh in a while, though.
Oh, wait, hold on.
Let's see. No. Okay.
$943,000, and they just launched today. So in under 24 hours, they're almost to a million. There's 24 days to go. It is insane. Now, I didn't do the first Bones Kickstarter. I missed out on it. This one is a little bit more simple. There are two levels to fund at. You can fund $1 and then increase that fund in order to get some of the add-on minis that they have. If you're not familiar with the way that they conduct their Kickstarters, as they hit stretch goals, they unlock more miniatures that you can purchase basically for increasing your pledge. So if you want to buy a dragon, increase your pledge by $12, and now you can get the dragon as well. However, they also have the second tier, and that is at the $100 level. And for $100, you started off by getting like a little over 24 figures. I mean, it might have been like 40 to 50 figures. I'm just looking at the picture right now. I can't really do a count in my head, but you get a smattering of figures. The crazy thing is as they get to other stretch goals, not only are they giving you these extra models that you can purchase by increasing your pledge, but they are just throwing things in to this $100 package. There are now well over 100 models. I'm talking closer to 150 models that are included at the $100 level. That is insane. Like, scrolling down is just nuts when you're looking at the stuff that you get included in this package. There is sort of the caveat, right? And I think the sort of the elephant in the room is this is not really like a Kickstarter, is it?
No.
This feels more like I am buying miniatures from Reaper Minis.
Yeah. I mean, at a great discount in order for them to get all the money up front, basically.
Right. So there is that. And that goes counter to the way I usually like to approach Kickstarter. Unfortunately, it's just too good of a deal for me to not.
I do want to
point out,
they do have mice minis for Mouse Guard.
Yep, those are available. You can increase your option or increase $10 and you get 5 mice.
And they are adorable.
They are so cute. There's this one that I'm not going to say what it is because I might buy it as a present for a friend who listens to this podcast and is probably looking at this Kickstarter right now. Spoiler alert, don't look at this Kickstarter and friend PC Matt because,
rhymes with fracking.
No, come on. Really?
He was going to look at the Kickstarter.
Yeah, he should. There's a Kraken model, Matt. Buy it. It's $15. It's insane. Like, the deal is just nuts. My if you follow me on Twitter, you can see a picture of my my email inbox. It is like literally top to bottom updates because they keep hitting stretch goals and they keep cranking out extra stuff, extra goodies.
Yeah, I was gonna resist on this one, but your constant scrolling up and down, showing off each and every miniature as the show has gone on, has started. I mean, look, there's Savage Worlds minis.
Yep. You get two, just for $100, you get like a couple different groups of Pathfinder minis. You get some Savage World specific ones. You get some dude that looks awesome. You get a nun.
Now
with
that
a
you're
pistol.
Back into painting, you're going to be painting these
I know.
Forever.
It really, that was sort of what really spurred it. Now that I'm doing all my painting on my War Machine models, I'm like, I cannot miss out on this Bones Kickstarter. Like, I need to do this. So give it a look. I mean, if you're into minis, if you're into role playing, if you're into any of that stuff, it's a tremendous value. Like,
and it will only get better.
It's only going to get better. I mean, at this point now, I was lucky enough to get in. I'm going to receive the second wave of shipping. I think they're up to like wave 6 now. But it's nuts.
Also, very well organized.
It is.
Adding tiers that are essentially the same, but capping each of their tiers so that they then do another wave of shipping and you just get in on that is an awesome idea for organization. Yeah. And only having 2 pledge levels, thank you.
Yeah, it's super simple. I mean, it gets a little bit more complicated because they added like a third type of add-on bonus, which is a little, I have to read the fine print, I think, on it. But for the most part, it's pretty straightforward. Color-coded. The stuff that's purple is stuff that's included in the $100 level. The stuff that's orange is stuff that's add-ons. So take a look. It's pretty sweet. I know that Dell, you've been have you been painting your miniatures or putting them together, or are you just staring at them?
I stare at the box and feel bad that I haven't painted them yet.
You feel the weight of thousands of hours of enjoyment pressing down on your frame.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could all get together and have a hobby day.
I would love that.
Yeah, I love the idea of the stitching bitch, if you've ever heard of that. Girls get together and they all knit and talk about their boyfriends. This would be great. Everybody get together, get out the jeweler's magnifying glass on an arm, and mm-hmm. we'll all paint.
Yeah. No, I would definitely be down. Yeah, I would definitely be down. So check it out. It's pretty sweet. I get to be really excited about it, and I think that my enthusiasm comes through because I get to stand up while I'm saying it, which is great because I like standing while podcasting, I think. Before we go on, we do have a 5-star iTunes review. Of course, if you're listening to us on iTunes, you can subscribe. You can give us a review. The more stars, the better. However, don't let that stop you from reviewing us. If you think we're 1 star, why are you listening, you jerk? But if you still feel strongly enough that you want to give us a review, please do. We definitely appreciate feedback, even if it's from a terrible person like you, Mr. 1-star review. It's hypothetical. We haven't got a 1-star review yet. We have very lovely reviews. Del, do you want to take this review and just read the hell out of it?
Sure.
Go ahead.
D&D and More. 5 stars by Tato Chip. I found this because of a D&D friend and have listened to all the episodes. I love the episodes where there is a D&D campaign, and I love listening to thoughts about various board games or card games out there. Thanks, guys, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Tato Chip, for being delicious and crispy.
So, like Chris said, you can leave iTunes reviews. You can mm-hmm. also add us to your favorites. Subscribe on Stitcher.
Yes.
If you listen on Stitcher. I listen on Stitcher. Mm-hmm. So,
have you had a problem with the Stitcher player for you?
I haven't, but I have heard.
I've heard tale
that somebody might
Stitcher. So. I have my eye on you.
Yeah, but please, if you use Stitcher, please subscribe, favorite, thumbs up. All of that helps the algorithm, gets us in more people's ears.
You know what gets us in even more people's ears?
What's that, Del?
Telling an actual friend how funny we are and how great it is to listen to the NPC cast every single week.
Yeah, like Tato Chip's friend did.
Yeah.
He told Tato Chip about us, and that's how we continue to, mitosis through yes. the ears of listeners.
Is that?
That isn't what that means at all, but I'm going with it.
Keep going. Gives it to you in the ear hole.
We do.
First shirt. Done. Right there.
So yeah, please, social media, you can share us there. Word of mouth, we appreciate all of that. Thank you so much. We are seeing our fan base grow, and it gives us warm and fuzzies all over our bodies. That being said, if there is nothing else to add, I'm going to stand right here and tell you to add 1,000 XP to your character sheets, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Your standing is so disconcerting.
Dude, I love it. NPC Cast is written by Chris, Dell, and Aaron. You can reach us on Twitter at twitter.com/NPCcast or by email at thenpccast@gmail.com. As always, support your local game store.